Commission meeting for Tuesday, September 26, 2023. We have all five current commissioners present this evening. Has there been any word from the mayor on a potential replacement for her nominee? Okay. Okay. Well, then everybody who's currently serving is here, and so we'll get started. Our first item of business is a motion to approve our agenda as published.
Madam Chair, I move that we approve this evening's agenda as published.
Thank you, Commissioner Gedge. I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye. Yes.
All right. Any opposed? Okay. Our next item is to approve our minutes from 2 weeks ago. Anything to discuss or note on that? Okay, I'm ready for a motion.
Madam Chair, I move we approve the minutes from our previous meeting as published.
Thank you again, Commissioner Gedge. I'll second that. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, staff, any business for us this evening?
No, nothing new. Nothing new. It's on the agenda for your training. That's the only thing. So.
Great. Thank you. Planning Commission, anything? We'll let Ms. Bevins do an update on City Council meeting in a minute, but anything besides that?
And this might go with Ms. Bevins' report, but I understand it was a pretty contentious City Council meeting, and another municipality also had some issues following the council meeting. And so I'm just wondering if we were to ever have a very crowded meeting, just security, police protection for us as commissioners to make sure that, I know it's next door, but are there any mechanisms to make sure we're as volunteers protected?
So they did have extra police here.
I'm just wondering for us as a planning commission.
I know, but they would probably provide the same kind of
thing. I'm just wondering
an extra officer in the back the whole time.
Okay, if we were to, and how we just invoke that or ask for that, just that's just the one comment. Just because it's, you know, a few things recently locally, so.
I feel like Greg is on that. He'll know if.
In the past, when there's been an item on the agenda that was very contentious and we expected a large crowd, we would notify the police department and they'd send somebody over here.
Thank you.
I had one item. I will be out of town October 24th. So for our second meeting in October, that is Jordan School District's fall break. I would encourage the rest of you to look at your schedules to make sure we can have a full commission that day.
Guns N' Roses is that night too.
I'm up in the air.
Okay, so it sounds like in 2 weeks we need to
I'm here.
Staff know for sure. Oh, you're not?
I'll be here, yeah.
All right.
I didn't plan to.
Okay.
I didn't buy tickets for that reason.
And maybe the mayor will have a sixth for us. Okay, well, we can touch base again in 2 weeks on that. Okay. Ms. Bevins, why don't you give us a recap?
Okay, so like Nate said, it was a long meeting. It was a very contentious meeting, but it actually started really, really well. They did a big presentation for Constitution Week and did a declaration that had a couple of different musical numbers, and the Daughters of the American Revolution were here, so that was a really cool tribute that they did. And then really the only thing on the agenda that night was the couple of things. Eminent domain for the sidewalk going in on 2700 West, that did pass, so that construction has started. And then the use of eminent domain on three different pieces of property to cross the Whedon Farms to put in the road, connecting 102 South from 3200 West to 2700 West, right? Okay, Jeremy's nodding at me, I'm right. Sorry. That did not fully pass. They did not put the road in, but they did pass a substitute motion that included the use of eminent domain if necessary to install a storm drain system across the Whedon Farms property. And so that's where that ended.
A1 to Park Open Space Subdistrict, and Andrew has our staff report tonight.
Yeah.
Well, supposedly the 26th. But and so it comes out the 12th. So I don't have it. I can go upstairs and,
okay.
And see if I can get it off. Let's try getting it off.
Staff, would you like to take a 5-minute recess?
Maybe just if we could.
You're good?
If we could.
Oh, okay. I will move that we have a 5-minute recess while the staff gets their
second
presentation. All in favor?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. We'll reconvene in five.
It's just a narrow canal. It's only about like 6 or 8 feet wide.
A dead. It's not a canal.
Everything's bigger. See, here then, on this side of the Mississippi, on the desert side.
Sure, I think we're ready to go when you are.
The rivers. On that side, the insects are bigger.
Okay, Commission, I move that we reconvene our meeting.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
Aye.
Okay. Andrew, we'll let you go on with the staff report.
All right. This is an application to rezone some property that the city owns. We're just adjacent to Bangor Highway on the west side, kind of in between South Jordan and 114 a little bit, just down from the temple right there. We own all five of those parcels. Four of them are existing in the A1 agricultural. One is already in the OSP, just from different periods of those developments and how that worked out in obtaining those. The city would like to initiate a project to essentially activate the open space into what you see before you, a primitive dirt trail for mountain bikes and dirt biking skills to be done in two phases. Right now the focus is on phase one, which you can see in the white dots, 1 through 18 on that little area. Right now the rezone is to assist with this project. The existing A1 agricultural zone doesn't allow for this project. It's classified as an outdoor recreation use, but OSP for Open Space Park does under a conditional use permit. And so aside from needing to rezone the property for this project, the city also needs to rezone it for it to be consistent with the existing land use that's also open space, because we like those to be compatible with each other. Engineering and Parks Divisions did host an open house. The notice was included within your packet last Thursday. There was a small turnout that went well. They talked about the two phases that are going to be done with the residents. It sounds like a good discussion on the cul-de-sac access and its capability to have, park up to 10 additional cars for those that aren't actively commuting there on their bikes or by foot using the trails. The pavilion you can still access paved. It crosses the canal safely and has a north to south access trail running through it. The city council is scheduled to hear this next Tuesday on their meeting, so staff is recommending that the commission send a positive recommendation to them for that. We still do have to do a site plan application and a CUP for our project as per city code, and you'll see those applications following the rezone on the 10th, where you'll get the rest of the details that you do typically see with a site plan application.
Okay, thank you. Commissioners, questions for staff before we do our public comment? Go ahead.
Just mine, and I know if this is for a rezone, it's not, and not the site plan or CUP. I'm just confused as why open recreation would be a conditional use on an open space park use, and if that might be for the future an opportunity to maybe improve that listing, especially if city council hears this rezone. I'm just wondering if there's any reasoning why that would be a conditional use and just not permitted.
The zone's relatively new, about 10 or so years ago, give or take a few five.
Okay, so we've probably used some cleanup. So I don't know also how much OSP space we have in the city after this project, but just doesn't, make sense that you have to get conditional use for a park and an OSP for an outdoor recreation use. So, that's just my one concern. I know that's not part of the item we're reviewing tonight. It's a rezone, but just as other items go through a rezone to an OSP, something we might want to consider moving forward, unless outdoor recreation entails some other uses that we need to consider. So that's just my one comment on that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Why doesn't this application fall under the ordinance change that we made recently about the city applying to itself for projects? Waiving that requirement. Is it because it's a rezone?
Yes.
Okay. There's a pavilion, so I assume that in the park system it can be reserved. Do you know what the limitations are on how many or what restrictions we have on people count for events? If somebody were to reserve that pavilion or this facility to try and run something, what the limits on the crowd that can be assembled would be?
That's better suited for engineering, Jeremy.
I don't know. I'm sorry.
Okay.
I don't know what those limits are, and I'm not 100% sure whether that pavilion is reservable in the system. It's a very small pocket park that is. It used to be an HOA park that was turned over to the city at some point in time, and so I'm not certain if it's actually a reservable space.
Okay. Would there have to be any sort of coordination if somebody were to host an event here? I could see this potentially being a location where they want to have a bike competition, or Bingham's biking team might want to practice, or...
It's possible. It's possible that they would be interested in it, but we've intentionally tried to engineer it so that it's... not a draw for a large crowd like that. It's a pretty small loop.
Okay.
Initially, the intention with this is to initially just build, if you look in your packet, that last page shows phase one very clearly. And that's our initial intent. That's all we have funding for at this point in time. And so it's kind of a soft start because our intention is not to put cars on the road. We're trying to just kind of make it a amenity for the local neighborhood, for the park users on the Welby Canal Trail. And so you can see that we don't have a pump track, there's no jump line. The things that really draw a lot of teenagers and a lot of cars are not there. It's more of a draw for younger users.
Okay. Questions down here?
I have a question. Mm-hmm. This is probably for Mr. Simonson. What kind of legal liability for injuries does the city incur in a park?
I've always wondered that, especially when I see that skate park next to the rec center. That thing terrifies me.
Aside from the fact that you have to go through some hoops because we're a governmental entity, the city can be liable for negligence just like any other property owner.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, South Jordan is the applicant. So at this time, I'm going to open it up to public comment. If you've joined us today to comment on this item, we would invite you to come to our podium if you're in person. State your name and where you reside for our records, and then we'll give you 3 minutes to address the commission. And then after those in person, we'll also give people that are on Zoom an opportunity to speak. Please.
Hi. My name is Kenneth Duquette. I live two houses down from High Point Park. On a side point, High Point Park Pavilion is not reservable. It's used by the individuals in the cul-de-sac quite a bit, and people just go, but I've tried to reserve it for a birthday party, you can't. Honestly, I seem like I went to the wrong meeting, should have went before. I was just curious about what the parking would be, finding out that it's not supposed to bring a lot of car traffic. Sounds great, as my kids play in that cul-de-sac. Is there any place, well, I don't know if you can ask questions in this form. Sorry, first one of these I've ever been to.
We will note questions and get them answered after public comment.
Is there a way to see what the second phase is planning on right now?
We'll have staff tell us after public comment.
Awesome. Thank you.
Okay. Is there anybody on our Zoom meeting that would like to? Okay, so we'll turn it over to Zoom. If you would like to address the commission on this item, we would ask that you turn on your camera and give us a wave. We'll give you the floor. Andrew, is that you? Are you the third person?
I think so.
Okay. Then I'm going to say that I think anybody who wanted to speak has spoken, unless Mr. Simonson wants to speak as a citizen. Not today. Okay. All right, I'm gonna close public comment and bring it back to the commission. Staff, do you have any details about what phase two would look like? Is that the map you were just showing us? Because it had additional features beyond. So could you bring that back up and tell us what you think is going to be phase two?
Yeah, so potentially, and keep in mind, there's right now that there's only funding for that phase one that I highlighted that did not include a jump line. But potentially, there is an opportunity. We could squeeze a jump line into this. And it's shown there, it's kind of hard to see on the screen, but the black circles, the numbers 19 through 27, that's kind of the jump line where it's basically just a series of four jumps that are parallel to each other. You can kind of see a picture of it on there on the left side that says phase two side-by-side jumps. But like I said, the city's trying to be very sensitive to this community. And at this point in time, there's no plan to add that jump line. It's more just a feature that could potentially be added in the future, but there's no timeline or money set aside for that, if that makes sense. It's just something that we'll kind of test this first loop and see how that's received, and then if it makes sense to go to phase two, then we could look at that.
Okay. And then just for information's sake, this body on legislative items is not the final word. This, we will forward a recommendation to the City Council, who as elected officials oversee any final word on a rezone. So I would just like the public to know that if they have further concerns or information that they would like to have the city consider, that they should contact their City Council member and attend that meeting. Do you know when the City Council will be hearing this item?
Next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday. Okay. You could come and do this again if you'd like. So,
I just feel bad. I'm so boring. Last meeting was so fun.
We like boring. All right. Commissioners, further discussion. This is just a rezone. We will see this again. Okay.
And I'll say it probably pertains more to the site plan, but just out of curiosity, I know in the packet it says that timing of phase one is supposed to start in the spring, like April-ish. What is the anticipated completion time, and what does that construction portion of it look like?
I don't think it would take them much more than a couple months to finish. Okay. This, if that. So yeah, it'll probably start in like April time frame, depending upon weather, and hope for completion in June is what I would expect.
Okay.
This feels like maybe phase one is a little bit like some of the bike trails that are in Daybreak on the west side of Mountain View Corridor. some of the more native part, not the actual destination feature. And then is that what I'm envisioning in my mind? Is something in a neighborhood, it's got some up and down features, and then it could get more sophisticated by having more engineered features in the future.
Yeah, exactly. This will have a few, it'll have, you know, like shown on those pictures, it'll have about 15 different like wooden features, but they're more just like roller, you know, things to roll over and not like actual jumps, you know, nothing like that. But yes, very similar to what you're describing. Those trails that are kind of, if you go straight up South Jordan Parkway, they're in the median there.
Yeah, Lake, when you go up Lake and, head north. Okay. This is more of a site plan, so I'm just going to, rather than the zoning, but I think it is somewhat relevant because who the target area of the zone is. We talked about the neighborhood. Do we have an area of radius that we think this may apply to? And the reason I'm interested is because I'm across 114th South and to the southwest of there, so like 44th, 42nd West and 115th South or something like that. And so my question is like that area, when we start getting into drawing additional bike traffic as we widen 40th West to 5 lanes, as we, you know, it's already got a lot of traffic incidents there. I see it a lot and some pretty nasty crashes. My own kids will say, like, I don't like these intersections over here because they're challenging. I just want to be, as you go through to the site plan thing, how are we going to address pedestrian safety in that area for even in phases for anyone else that gets drawn into that park that might be within a mile and a half radius or a mile radius?
I think that's a great comment. And it touches on our intention with having this amenity right next to the Welby Canal Trail is to just try and build more motivation to actually use that trail. Mm-hmm. That trail's fairly new, and so we are trying to do better with like wayfinding, making sure that the crossings are safe. You know, specifically that crossing at Daybreak Parkway, the intention there is for trail users to go down to the intersection and actually cross at the intersection of 40th and then get back on the trail, which isn't the most convenient, but that's all we have at this point in time. But yeah, especially as we get more pedestrian traffic on that trail, that is something we'll be watching.
And then maybe another thing just to consider as you're thinking about the connectivity of this. This is to propose zone to maybe the other destinations that might be in a trail. So I don't know how far it is away from the regional park. I think it's probably about another mile or two.
I think it's a couple miles.
Yeah. So I could see someone who's on a bike wanting to, you know, is there a connection that could take them to both parks?
That's exactly what we're hoping.
Okay.
It makes for a fun ride.
Yeah,
have an amenity here, and then you can carry on your way and go up to the Bingham Creek Park, and there's other features there.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. The only thing I just wanted to add a comment, I appreciate you guys including the public notice. I believe that might be an item that we hear on our next portion of our meeting, but thank you for sharing that in the staff report, and I just wanted to commend you guys on the staff report this evening. So, Madam Chair, if there's no other discussion, I'd like to make a motion, please. I move that based on the staff report that I just referenced and our discussion this evening, that I move that we, the Planning Commission, forward a positive recommendation to the City Council to approve ordinance number 2023-04-Z, rezoning a separate parcel from A-1 to OS-P.
Okay, we have a motion. The only comment I have on it is that I have no concerns about a rezone to OSP. My understanding is, however, we'll get to see a site plan and the conditional use permit will come before us, where we'll get to probably poke at this a little bit more and make sure that we're comfortable with the actual use that's being potentially proposed tonight. So, any other comments? All right, then I'll second that motion. Ms. Valdez?
Commissioner Gedge?
Aye.
Commissioner Hollis?
Yes.
Commissioner Catmull?
Aye.
Commissioner Darby?
Yes.
And Commissioner Bevan?
Yes.
Okay. This will be forwarded to the City Council with a 5-0 positive recommendation in favor of rezoning these properties. Mr. Duquette, thank you for joining us tonight. We always appreciate public input.
Thank you.
All right. Our only other business this evening is training. I'm really excited.
I'm
serious
glad you're excited.
When I say that. I need it personally.
Yes, it's Greg and Greg. I almost put Greg's. Who would you like to go first? I'm going to be talking about public notice, and I believe Greg Simonson will be talking about variances.
I think Greg should go first.
Greg should go first. I agree. Let's go alphabetically. Schindler, Simonson.
It'll be me then. All right. Now we have to use my.
Do we want the Zoom call to continue?
Does that put us in any sort of risky standing?
Yeah, you can leave it on there. We just don't.
Be public comment.
There won't be any public comment for this. But if they want, if somebody on Zoom wants to stay and listen to this, it's a public meeting. So. However, I think I'm going to have mine. There we go. Thank you.
Let me just say this. It's fine to go forward and have it be part of the public meeting, but you as a commission have the option of ending the public meeting and having the training separate if you want to do that.
The staff IT resources have a recommendation for. I want to be cognizant of their time if it allows them to leave early. Can we excuse Mr. Day if we end the Zoom meeting? And if that's so, I would be in favor of ending the public meeting.
I don't think, I think someone will have to be there at the end. One of the two that are in there will have to be here to the end so they can turn everything off.
Is it Mr. German that does it?
Or Matt. Or Matt can do it. So,
Madam Chair, I move that we end this evening's public hearing and proceed with a closed training for the commission.
Any conversation on that? Then I'll second it. All in favor?
Yes.
Yes.
Any opposed? I think we're going to end our public meeting and move to our training.
So.
And we'll excuse the two of you if you'd like to go.
Would you like me to give you all a hug?
Yes, I do want a hug.
All right, so first, public notice. There's almost everything that we bring to you, obviously, is going to have a public notice, but there are a few things that you don't see that also require public notices. So we can start by the this came right out of the code in 1704.060. The City Council, the Planning Commission, or an appeal or variance hearing officer shall schedule and hold any statutorily required public hearing or public meeting according to the provisions of this title and state law. The city shall provide notice of the date, place, and time of public hearings or public meetings at least 10 days before the date of the public hearing or meeting by posting the notice of the hearing the meeting on the city's website and to the Utah Public Notice website, and by giving mail written notice to the hearing to each affected entity. And the affected entity list we have a list of, I think there's 15 or actually 19 affected entities that we've identified that could be affected by anything that the Planning Commission or City Council would review that comes out of Title 17 or 16, like subdivisions or anything like that. And the affected entities include all the cities that surround us. So it'd be Sandy, Draper, Harriman, Riverton, and West Jordan would all get noticed of our agenda and also of the actual applications. They get notices too. They get the same public notice that residents will get.
And you have to mail that to each city?
Yes. Well, we could choose to email that to them, but we end up mailing that, because then most of them will mail it to us too. We don't get emails from any of them. We don't get their applications too often, but we definitely get all their agendas from all those cities. Harriman and Sandy will send us the public notice that I think probably goes out to the residents in their cities as well. We'll get those for their projects.
Just to clarify, that last number two says mailed written notice to each affected.
It says mail, so I guess so email or mail. I think they assumed that when this was written that it was, you know, snail mailed, I guess, as we call it.
It would be. I guess is that mailed, like electronically mailed?
we send it all through the U.S. Post Office mail. Okay, gotcha. That's what we do. And also what's required is the city also provide a copy of each staff report pertaining to a land use applicant to that applicant at least 3 business days prior. And so that happens as well because they get it through the what's online. Same thing you do, because we try to get that. That is usually prepared by Thursday, the Thursday before your meeting. And so that is 3 business days. So Thursday, Friday, and Monday, and then Tuesday is a full day too. So
by posting it publicly, provided a copy.
Right. Well, we all the applicants are notified that that's where they'll find it, because now with our City View, our program that we use for processing all these applications, it automatically lets them know when it's scheduled, and so then and when the agenda is ready for them to.
So what happens if there are revisions, edits to that staff report between the Thursday and the meeting on Tuesday? I don't know if the item we heard last meeting was similar to that or was fully included in the staff report, but there's additional items or recommendations or reviews. How does that fall if there are changes within that 3 business day period?
I don't know if we have too many that change the staff report until, you know, or items on there. Because I can't remember when we've had one that would change at the last minute and not be sufficient to get it out to the applicant. Because usually if it's anyone trying to change it, it would be the applicant normally, because we wouldn't make any revisions once we've reviewed the staff reports.
Didn't we have that last meeting?
Or were those 6 staff things included in the, I guess, the original report? That's what I was going at from our last meeting.
I believe they were, I hope so. But so those should have been, and then obviously, any changes that the commission, you know, puts in, that comes in with the minutes, so that's fine. Also, the state law what I've just read so far is pretty much what state law requires, and so it's the same thing. It's the agenda noticing. State law also doesn't. We have some notices that have to go out to individual property owners within a certain distance. The state law does not require that. They only require the notification be put in the city's website, and then the state public notice website, and be mailed to the affected entities. That's what they have in there. They have different classes of notice. There's a class A and a class B. We follow basically the class A notification, which is those three notices. Once in a while, if there is a class B, that's what adds a notice to, not really a distance notice, but you're sending it to homeowners or things like that, to the applicants and so forth. And that's only happens once in a while, but most of the time it's a class A notice that we go beyond that, because our code requires 300-foot notice to subdivisions and 300-foot notice for site plans and and so forth. So we go a little bit beyond what the state requires in that way.
Is that little last sentence after the 300-foot boundary, as evidenced in the records of the Salt Lake County Recorder's Office, sufficient to hold the city blameless if there was an error in the records? Meaning you go into some system that I assume the county recorder gives you access to, and as long as you've contacted everybody that the system identified.
That's why it says that, because that's what the county records have indicated. And Matt keeps that updated for us. So, because the county updates their records, is it quarterly about, or?
We get records from the county when they send them to us.
Okay.
And we update that as we receive them. Quarterly is probably as good a guess as any.
Okay.
And then at the bottom, there's also posting on site. Again, applicants applying for future land use amendments and rezonings have to post those on the site. And actually, it says they do it, we do it, because that way we make sure it gets done. So, and because we used to have them do it, and then they had to take a picture and bring it to us to prove it to us. But once we kind of switched that, said staff will do it, that way we know it's been done.
And in the world of generative AI and graphics, it's hard to trust some of the photo proof now.
I have a question for you on that. So it says they have up to 30 days to file a complaint, but that kind of conflicts in my mind with the 10 days. So
it's
if they win their appeal, does that mean any actions taken are reversed?
Yeah, we'd have to renotice it again and have the public hearing.
And so if we've approved something and the contractor's begun work and then someone won their appeal, would we have to tell the contractor, sorry, you got to stop?
Well, it's not necessarily that your approval would change. It's just that they have to have another public hearing on that. So we assume that that you wouldn't change your minds on that, I guess. And it's, the 30 days is interesting because it's 30 days after you've made after the meeting date. And by that time, more than likely, the minutes have already been approved because they've already had a second meeting and so forth to approve those. But, what they're appealing is that they didn't get noticed.
Okay.
And that's the only thing. And if they do, we haven't really had, I don't know if we had anybody that's actually said I didn't get noticed. And if it's because they're county records, then that's, we don't have to renotice it because we use the county records thing. But if they're in there and we missed it or whatever, or we just, then of course we would have to rehear it. But I don't think it would change, I hope.
And just to follow up on one of those statements, so technically, even though we approve an item this evening, it's not official until our next meeting when the minutes are approved. That's correct. And so no work should really commence until after the minutes are approved. Is that a fair statement?
That would be true, yes. So,
okay.
Is that actually what happens?
Do you have anything else you want to add to that?
I will.
I was going to say, it seems like contractors walk out of here and start digging.
They might. It's if they have a preliminary subdivision, they really can't do much until they get the final approved by staff and record it. But a site plan, they can start. Right out. And it's, I don't believe we've told them that's at their own risk if they start right away, but usually.
Or building permit.
I guess.
Or building permits could not be issued until after we approve the minutes, correct?
Right. Okay. Well, I don't know. Usually they don't. They're not that quick about getting building permits either. After sometimes it goes several months before they submit for a building permit, and then there's often once in a while there's times when
building permits.
They didn't do anything for a year, and so then their approval expires. And it's always amazing how quickly they want to be on an agenda and then how long it takes for them to actually start work.
Well, and the reason I just bring that up is, and you know, we've ended the public meeting, but this could still be in the minutes, is an item we heard last meeting due to the urgency to get done, and we didn't approve the minutes till about 40 minutes ago. You know, it looks like some paving had already occurred on that property since our last meeting, because I drove on the new pavement on Sunday. So I'm just wondering, you know, were they at their own risk? And if we were to not approve the minutes, they could have had to rip that up, correct?
I don't know if you approved the minutes. I mean, you can't really change your vote with the minutes. So,
in the case of a site plan, they can't, as I understand it, and correct me if I'm wrong and Jeremy's gone, they can't get a building permit until the final plat is recorded. And the final plat is not recorded until after, I mean, what you had last time was a preliminary, and then you have the staff that's got to issue the final plat approval. Am I getting that right, Greg?
This is for that subdivision, King's Landing?
Perhaps.
Right. They still have to, once their civil plans are approved by Brad Clavino, then that's done with the preliminary plat. Anything they do, Daybreak does it all the time. They all start work. They can get a land disturbance permit. They can get a grading permit. They can get all of that, even before you review it. But they do everything at their own. If they don't, they do it. It's all at their own risk. Okay. So, and we have them do it quite a bit. So it's
just good to know the whole process as these flow through. So
I know a lot of them like to get their, you know, once they've got their preliminary plat approval, Daybreak included, they want to start work as soon as they can, but they don't want to have to. Most of them will wait, and they don't want to have to put up a bond for the improvements. They want to get the work all in and then have us inspect it, and so they don't have to put that bond up. What they're at risk, if they did something that didn't meet our code, they'd have to rip it out before we would approve it. So. The Daybreak ones, they've been doing it for so long, they know what our standards are. So probably better than we do, almost.
Can you go back to the previous one? I had a question about the posting on site. Are there any time? Do they have to post on site within a certain number of days?
It's the same, 10 days before, at least 10 days before the meeting.
To me, it's not necessarily clear in that section. You look at it and see if it's.
Yeah, that one is not.
I mean, we know we've got a huge backlog, but that's one that. If it's been a problem, I don't know if it's been a problem. Oh, because you guys do it, because our staff does it.
Staff does it. We have the signs. In fact, I'll skip forward a little really fast. That's what they look like. And we fill them out by hand. What the proposal is, the Planning Commission date, City Council date. The name of the applicant and their phone number if they want to contact, if somebody sees it, they can contact them. And then the planner usually, and then on that, and then that's the main city number that they'll call and ask for that planner's name. So,
is this like a big poster board?
It's pretty big. Yeah, it's 2 feet by 3 feet.
And is this generally removed like the day after the hearing, or is there a time period how long it stays up after the meeting?
It can be removed whenever. Usually, Public Works will go out and take them down, but we don't know how quickly they do it. So, but
I'm just wondering, like, if we've heard an item, approved it, and then it's still up, and so the residents then call, and it's too late at that point. I'm just wondering the timing of that.
Yeah, I think we try to get them down as quickly as possible. And Public Works, I think we have to let them know that we had the meeting, because they usually aren't involved with the Planning Commission. So.
They're hard to miss.
Let's see. For the general plan adoption or modifications, again, date and time, place of the first public hearing, though, in this case,
to consider the original adoption or any modification of all or any portion of a general plan. The notice is to be placed on the public notice website, again, for the state, the city website, for 10 days, and mailed to all affected entities within 10 days of the public hearings. The notice, date and time and place of any public meeting regarding the adoption or modification of a general plan is to be placed, again, within 24 hours on the website within 24 hours of meetings. So it's if, like, you know, we have open houses or something like that for it. They don't have to have the big notice like that, but they need to be, or within 10 days, they just have to be posted within 24 hours of the meeting, so people can, I guess, come to those.
Need mail post dated 10 days from when the public hearing is? Or do you actually mail it out a couple of days in advance so that they get it 10 days before?
We send out the notices on usually no later than Fridays of each week of the 2 weeks before. So Saturday is actually 10 days before your meeting. Mm-hmm. So you send them out on Fridays or Thursdays. All mine go out on Thursdays because I don't work in the office on Fridays. I work remotely, so I get it all done on Thursday. So everyone should get most notices, and most people do it on Thursdays, and they can get them. They'll get them either, since it's local, they'll get it by Friday or Saturday in the mail. At the latest, somebody might get it on Monday if it was mailed on Friday, which isn't the 10 days, but it does have to be mailed within 10 days, okay, to postmark. So.
And this is all the information you're required to show, which is date, time, and place of a hearing, and then like the property address is being impacted. You're not required to show a site plan or additional details?
No, and okay. With site plans and things, the state does not even require any notice for those.
Okay.
Or subdivision, they don't require notice.
Do we notice those?
Yes, we do.
Okay.
We do, only because the state also does not require, you can choose who's going to be the, city can choose who's going to be the land use authority for site plans and subdivisions. And some cities choose staff to be the land use authority. Some cities choose the planning commission, like us. Most cities choose planning commission to look at those things and subdivisions. So that's why they don't require the notice to go out, because it's up to the city to who's going to be the land use authority on that and how you're going to work it. But we do send out all the notices 300 feet.
And that's optional. It's not required by city code, correct?
No, city code requires.
Okay, it does require.
Yeah, our city code requires a 300-foot notice for everything, except zone text amendments, because it's a citywide thing. We're not going to send a notice to everybody in the city, but we place it on the city website and everywhere else on that. And then also there are, later in my slides here, there's another time when we send out additional, it's called additional notice, and it's, we expand the notice area from 300 to 600 feet on certain site plan reviews because of the nature of the use that's being reviewed may affect a greater area. We've determined those may affect a greater area around from 600 feet away could be affected by it. So we send notices out to those people as well.
And is that mandated by a city code, or is that optional as well?
That's in city code. It's in Title 1718, where we have a list of uses, and one of the section it talks about the how you notice it, and one of the things that do for residential protection, I guess, is part of it, and extra notice is also in there. And it lists the uses that require that.
And just one thing on those, on the 300 feet or 600 feet, are we only required to notice people within the city of South Jordan, or do we have to the residents in neighboring municipalities?
Let me let Greg answer that one, because it does not say what. It just says 300 feet. It doesn't say if you, and so I know there's been times when we wish we didn't have to notice people in other cities because they're complaining more about something than
along the lines of what he just said. What does our city code say on those ones that we do notify that the state doesn't require? So like site plans and subdivisions.
Oh.
Do you just notify city residents or?
Well, I think we've been in the practice of notifying everybody within 300 feet.
Because they're affected entities.
I can remember back when the district was getting all their approvals back in 2005, and everybody in Riverton hated it. So it got to a point where the city manager was threatening to say, we're not going to notice these people anymore because all they do is kind of complain about something that's not even in their city.
That's what I was trying to get at, if that's something we need to consider. I don't know how many developments are left on adjoining properties, but now with whatever Daybreak 2.0 coming, you know, just that's something just to reconsider as we move forward and, you know, long term.
Yeah, we've, as far as I know, we've been sending the notices to, you know, we haven't been picking, because I think even on their, on that system that you guys created for us, it does go outside the city limits, doesn't on some of those things. So
we do have the capability of notifying residents with outside that are not within the city as well, if that's required.
Yeah, so that's, so I think we just do it because it's, we put 300 feet in and it gives us all the mailing labels for everybody, all the everybody that's on there. So, and we don't.
Is that distance of the notice requirement, is that like from the center of the application property address, or is it from the nearest boundary?
From the property boundary.
So the nearest property boundary,
yeah.
300 emitting, 300 feet, or X feet emitting, okay. Great, thank you.
There are some properties in Daybreak that go, you know, giant properties that the subdivision hasn't been approved, but it's in this huge area, and it, but one thing about it is it's, you know, 300 feet from that boundary is still another big expanse of open space. So there's hardly anybody that gets noticed sometimes, but on the west side.
And I wonder if that is, especially as we think about Daybreak 2.0 and if they're going to do big ones like that, does it make sense to make the notice area somehow commensurate with the size of the application? So if someone's going to be doing, you know, 50 acres or something like that, does it make sense to only have a 300 foot or a 600 foot boundary around that, or should it be a little bigger?
What we measure from is, you know, if, like in Daybreak, they have these big lots that were established with the master subdivision plat way back in 2003, mm-hmm. and they're 50 acres or 60 acres by themselves. So when they come in with a subdivision, they're only subdividing a portion of that lot number, and so we don't measure from the boundaries of what they're proposing because we don't know what that is. We measure from, they're proposing it on a 50-acre parcel, but they're only proposing a 9-acre subdivision, but they have to send the notices out from that the boundary of the 50-acre part, so it draws in a lot more people than it would if it was only taking the 9 acres. So. Mm.
Is that well received, or it seems like sometimes that might be, some people will get noticed that over noticed, and then they kind of tune out.
Well, the way our code reads is 300 feet from the subject property. So it's the subject property, just, you know, we don't have anything saying where the subject property is if it's only 9 acres out of 50. So we have to measure from that. That's the subject property. They're just having to divide that part. So, and then we don't, I think most people, because we also send a map showing where the property, where the subdivision is going to be located in, you know, in comparison to where their property might have been. They could look at it and go, oh, this isn't anywhere near us. So they don't care. Mm-hmm. So
I've got a suggestion later on for just an idea to share, but I'll let you go through the presentation and I'll share it later.
Let's see. So the notices for a subdivision amendment, subdivision, this is what we do, is the We do everything just like before with a, and a 300 foot. We also include the 300 foot notice on subdivisions with that, and plus all the public Utah public notice website and city website for 10 days, and then also to the affected entities. Subdivision amendment is a little bit different. The people that there's not a 300 foot mail out notice there. Required by state law that everybody within the subdivision being amended get notified. And so if there's 10 homes, 10, you know, 10 lots in a subdivision that's being amended, then there's 10 notices sent out to those people. But or if there's 900, then there's 900. And there was 900 once in Daybreak. They amended the village 9, which had 900 lots, and luckily enough, most of them were not built on yet, but we still had over 300 notices to send out to houses that had to homeowners.
Is that paid for with application fees?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it says on our code that needs to be updated a little bit, because it says that the owners have to provide the mailing labels and the postage. When we've changed that many years ago, we increased the fee to, you know, at some point we said it's because a lot of times people would just give us stamps, and then we had to label everything with a stamp, you know, and so we decided it would be better just to run it through our machine, and for a while Daybreak, they didn't. They would still pay the postage at first, but they didn't give us stamps. We would send it out and then bill them, and they paid every month because they had a subdivision almost every month, but they pay us for it. And so, but yeah, we're a little bit better at that now. It's included in the, you know, and we know some subdivisions are probably, you know, and some mail outs we do probably don't, the extra that's in, it's not in the application fee. It's part of it, so we don't do it separate ones. So some people are paying maybe a little bit more than the others. Some people are getting a bargain, some people are not. I don't know how that really works, but we spend a lot more money on the time of review, so that's why we do on postage anyway. But.
Does that sometimes the state legislature can become interested in things that affect development costs or time? Has there been any feedback about these extra city requirements?
Not that I know of.
There's not. It's probably a small. The fee is in line with other. That we charge is in line with other entities.
Well, our application fees. Yeah. We used to compare those, but we haven't done a fee comparison in years. What other cities do? We were, you know, in the middle someplace. On those, when we did. We move on to the vacating street right of way and municipal easements. It's a little bit different as well. For any petition to vacate some or all of public street or municipal utility easement, the legislative body shall hold a public hearing and give notice of the date and time and place of the hearing, and place the notice on the Utah Public Notice website and the city website and affected entities. But the notice is also mailed to the record of owner of each parcel that is accessed by the public street or municipality or municipal utility easement within 10 days of the public hearing. So that's a little bit different, and it's only the legislative bodies. That's not something the Planning Commission will see, but the City Council sees all of those.
And I guess based off last week's City Council, we're thankful for that.
But it makes me have a question. Why do they sometimes ask us for a recommendation, but not always? Just what they've decided what category of topics they want to pass through us?
Well, this is the state. State regulates vacating of streets, and it's in their state code. Mm-hmm. And then but also I believe for like rezoning, it's the Planning Commission is required to make a recommendation to City Council, to the legislative body. So that's why you get those, because it's in state code.
Okay, interesting.
and rezoning and land use amendments as well, and the general plan. You make a recommendation to the council. Site plan review and conditional use permits, that's basically the same thing, same noticing that we've talked about before and earlier tonight, even. We just the 300-foot notice, and then I put in there also in addition some uses reviewed with a site plan or a conditional use application require additional notice per Municipal Code Section 1718. The additional notice extends the distance from the subject property from 300 feet to 600 feet. That's where that comes from. So, and the purpose of the additional notice control measure is to ensure that the property owners are notified of uses and projects with a greater likelihood of negative impacts on properties beyond the immediate vicinity. So some of the ones I can come off the top of my head are even like gas stations and those things, they'll affect a little bit further away because they generate so much more traffic, and other retail uses, things that are industrial type uses or cause noise, like a fabricating something, they're manufacturing something inside their building, that could have noise, and things like that would have to be noticed as well. Variances and appeals. I know Greg's going to be talking about variances, but the notice of a variance, notice the date and time and place of all public hearings and meetings to consider a variance and application or an appeal application. But after receiving a variance or an appeal application from the city, a hearing officer shall fix a reasonable time and place for the hearing of the variance request or appeal during a public meeting. City recorder shall publish an agenda to be placed on the public notice website and the city website and post it at City Hall for 10 days and then give notice to the parties involved. So
a variance or an appeal hearing would be a public meeting then?
Yes. Public meeting, but the only people that get noticed on it, if you're looking at our website or if you're one of the parties to that variance or appeal.
Where on the website would this kind of notice be placed?
There is a section on the website. Where is it? Anybody know? I don't even notice. It's I think it's on the first page. I'll have to look.
Okay.
Maybe by the when Greg talks about the town, I can look at the website and see where they put that notice in, because there's got to be a button to push about future meetings and so forth. So
okay.
If you look under the government's header, there's a section called public notices.
Okay.
So it would be right there.
There we go. And lastly, this is a copy of one of my staff reports showing what I put in them and what most of the planners are putting in them. References to, I put what it is, and how many, this is a subdivision in Daybreak and how many acres it was and so forth. And I'm the only one that puts in the, should the planning commission find that a proposal in conformance with all state and codes, because it seems like in the Daybreak master development that you will approve it because you have no option if it meets all of the codes and Daybreak's, and with Daybreak's community structure plans and the development agreement. And I put that in all of them just so people understand that when they come, they can't just say we don't like it and then expect you to deny it because of that. So I've been putting that in, hopefully just to make sure people understand that if it meets all the codes and ordinances and agreements that we've got, the Planning Commission, your administrative review is subject to those things, and you don't have any legislative discretion to do something different.
Is you have the second to last paragraph where you say, if you want to submit by 3 o'clock the day of the meeting, basically, does that give you ample enough time to receive and get, I guess, sent over to us to make sure we have time to review before our meeting? Or should we move that up earlier in the day or the day prior just to make sure?
It gives me enough time to do it, but does it give you enough time? I mean, are you looking at it between 3 and 6:30? You know, so if you want me to, we can change that, because that's not in our code anywhere. That's just something that we have put in there, that 3 o'clock. But we can change it to noon or the day before or whichever.
I would probably prefer noon.
Okay.
3 o'clock hits and life gets busy on Tuesdays.
With all the road construction getting here,
I'll make that a point. I'll just let everyone know to change the time to be noon on. We put the date. It's the same day as the meeting.
Still the same day.
Yeah. So. Okay. And we list in there that you can, if they have further questions, they can email, because my email address is up there. They can email me, or they can call the city as well.
I wonder on some things, I'm thinking of the format. I wonder how effective the notices are. And just general curiosity, and that's not a doubting or a question. And is there an opportunity here to put something like a QR code where someone could just scan it quickly on their phone and it takes them right to it and encodes with additional information which application this is with or what it's referring to, and either be more specific at guiding them to things and being able to tell them, like, for example, they're going to get this 10 days in advance, so they won't be able to see the planning packet. But if we told them 3 days before the meeting, we're required to have this and you can get more details. But I'm just thinking of people who come and they don't necessarily get a chance to review the materials, and they just like the citizen we had today, he's like, I don't even know what's going on in these meetings. That will always happen. I'd like to reduce less of that, because I think really the intent, as it was talked about, is to get better decision making by getting more affected people that could be affected, get their comments. And I don't know that we have a sense for how many people are actively doing that. And that might be a good way to kind of measure over time. I'm sure someone in IT can look at that. Greg?
It might be something to do, but certainly we can probably make our notice a little shorter instead of putting all that information that I wrote up at the top. Just say that if you want more information, scan the QR code below and it'll take you to, but it won't be available until Thursday when we publish everything.
I do like the suggestion to point them to that packet and say more information will be available on this date for the details or something.
Because that would be a good way to do that, I think.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, when you send this, it'll say, like, well, you can go here. The packet will be there 3 days before. You know, but I'm not saying that the QR code needs to point to that. What I'm saying is the QR code should point them to probably something that orients them to the process, kind of like you are, like, this is there. I don't think they know, like, we are here and here's where we're going. And I think sometimes that would be I don't know. I just think as a citizen, I think that would be helpful. It continues the theme that I'm hearing, that we sometimes go above and beyond what the requirements are to achieve some better outcome. And I know we've been talking about that, like, in the combined training. Like, how do we, you know, sometimes the public meeting isn't the right venue. Maybe we need public here or the open houses like we had, you know, or something like that. I think as we continue to say, what is the outcome we're trying to achieve? What are the constraints or the requirements we have? And how can we best, that's the minimum, how can we potentially have a more engaged citizenry, because they'll be happier and over time. And I'm generally pleased with what I see in South Jordan as being a resident here for now, I guess about 13 years. I think it's great. I just don't know how many other people know how great it is. You know, it is because of the extra things that perhaps we do, or you guys do, specifically.
Well, we'll get into that. We'll have to talk a little bit more about how we do that and what we're trying to, I mean, give them more information is one thing. We can do that and make it easier, I guess, for them to get that information, so.
Yeah, I think if everyone who had attended, like, my goal, one goal might be is everyone who's, who chooses to attend a meeting like this has at least read the staff report. Like, I think that would be very, has the opportunity to read the staff report and it doesn't come as a surprise. I think if that,
right.
if that could happen, I think there's a lot of, we'd get past perhaps in some cases some of the easy questions and get into some harder ones, and it gives them time to think. I know it helps me.
Definitely put in the notice as well. Same thing as to let them know that they can go to the city website on Thursday at noon, and then it's everything's there for that. If they want information, if they want to see what the staff report is, they can read that. And that might even save some time for our staff because they wouldn't call us because they see it. You know, for more information, call staff or email staff. They can actually see it. You know, they get all the maps. They can see it, all the stuff, the way it looks now and what's proposed to be changed. So that might be a good idea there.
And then I'm just when I was looking on my phone on the city website, if I hold it in portrait mode, I don't see the government drop down, and so I couldn't see that. Anyway, you can take a look at it later. But like I'm looking at it, it's just got a search and it goes into water use. Like if I go to main menu. But if I click on somewhere else over there, a different place, or hold it here, then I get government and stuff like that. So I think we need to guide people a little better to go find it, because if we just take them to the planning commission or this, like we just gotta help them orient them to the process. If there's a way that we can do that generically, and then you know making the specific ones within, as we, like we've been talking about, I think that'd be a great investment of our time that would have more, I think people would be better prepared.
Okay. I don't think that's a hard thing to do, so we'll work on that.
Okay. And apparently it's really easy to generate QR codes. My kids do.
Yeah, I don't know how to do it, but I've heard, I've seen them all over the place, so they must be easy. We have IT guys for a reason.
Yeah.
That's all I have. If you have more questions, let me know.
I guess just one question of these notices, and I think we've brought this up before, but you have it stored to the people who were noticed in case someone adamantly says we weren't noticed. Is there some sort of audit trail? I'm assuming that's there. Just if not, I would recommend it is, but I'm assuming it's already there.
I think we would, most of the planners, I'm pretty sure, are saving the mailing label. The mailing labels, they save it as in a file, as a PDF.
Not to be confrontational with the public and say that we weren't notified, but I'd like to sometimes deflect that back saying, oh, yeah, we were, we can prove it, or staff can prove it. So,
And pretty much we can't because we get the mailing labels to, I don't know what you call, what's that map called?
It's our mailing label generator application.
Mailing label generator. And they're in PDF format. So I pretty think the other planners do. They save it to the file. So we have them in all forever. So of who we mailed to.
I think you only need it for 30 days, though, based on what we learned.
Yeah.
The caveat to that is, and Greg, you can correct me if we're wrong, but those mailing labels are generated from the county data, and we send them to the owner and the owner's address from the county data. If the owner is not living at the property within that 300-foot buffer, then it's up to them to take whatever action they feel is necessary. So a resident could come in and say, well, we didn't get a notice, but they may not be the owner of record for that property.
Right. If they're renting, that'd be a question that I would ask if they came in and said they didn't get noticed. I said, do you own the property? And if so, how long? Well, we bought it last week. Oh, okay. but if they say, no, we rent, well, then we're not required to send. We don't know. We send it to the owner because we don't know who's renting the property. So
if it's like an apartment complex, you don't notice each department individually. It would just be sent just to whoever owns the complex.
Right.
And then it would be on the complex owner to notify the residents or post it somewhere if they choose to do so.
That's right. And I think basically it's the state has it that way because it's who owns the property that's going to be affected. And people that are renting, they don't own that property. If they don't like what's happening, they can probably move easily. So,
okay.
So.
Maybe I'll email. I'll just say it. Maybe it's my job leaking into this because I do data and analytics, but I would love to, in the staff report, to see how many people were noticed. And then I don't know how hard it is to actually do this, the hit count on like the agenda packet, but then it'd be like, and then as we're reading it or if we're seeing it and public is seeing it, then they're like, what's this packet? I can read the commission packet. Because I know when I first started coming to public meetings, I didn't always think that I probably didn't have access to it. But here we definitely make it available and everything.
We can definitely put in how many notices we sent out, that number.
I'd volunteer to count, hit count. So
and then, and all if, right, yeah, anyway. Then if you can, you know.
You did hit counsel to the QR code. Okay. I have one other question, our team.
Anyway, so those are just ideas.
You can, sometimes you can count on one hand how many people come, and we may have sent 30 notices out, but yeah. Unless it's a controversial item, I'm surprised in a rezone we only had one person tonight. So
following the idea of the QR code, obviously we want people to read the packet. That's something we talk about all the time. Is it a potential that, like, obviously when city council starts, they usually have pictures or something flashing the screens. Could we just put the QR code that links to the packet for that evening's meeting on the screen so that people could just scan it and they have access to the packet at the start of our meetings? Well, obviously prior to the meeting starting, but as they walked in, they would have a QR code or something to scan.
I think that's probably a possibility, I suppose. I don't know why not. If we have a QR code prepared, they could scan it from the screen. I've done that on my TV at home, so they can do it here. So.
Or even just maybe back there where you sign in. Say,
yeah,
here's
something.
The,
so that.
Oh, put the QR code there.
Anywhere that they could just scan it as they come in.
Yeah, tonight's
this
program.
Whatever.
That's true. Tonight's agenda packet. Here you go. So, okay. That's another good idea. More transparency as we can get, the better. So,
well, we don't want to also tax isn't the right word. We don't want to cause too much time, or hopefully the extra time that we do some of these things, they have effect. And that's why I was talking about measuring some of these things, because it's like if we do it and we're not measuring, and that's the beauty of a QR code is, and why so many people use it is because you can track the utilization and know whether you're having time you're investing.
Okay. Well, we can see how that goes. If it turns out to be something that we don't want to keep doing because somebody, starts spouting off in the middle of the, they finally got to their item, but we already went through that one, but they didn't read it right, but we'll see how it goes though. I think it'd be nice. We do put the agenda back there; they can follow the agenda. But the rest of the packet, they haven't had a chance to look at it. Then this might be their chance to see what the staff report says.
So, just one thing of that, because I did serve on a previous municipality in the past, we had to have a printed copy of the packet available in the room for people who attended. Are we required to do that, or is just because we have it on the website, is that sufficient? Or is that just a courtesy? I'm just wondering if, do we need to have a print version? Especially where we might have some antiquated folk, elderly folks, or I don't know, people who are not technology.
Can't follow a QR code.
QR code or things like that. Is that something we need to consider just so people can reference that?
I don't think we have any requirement that we have to have the packet available for anyone. It's not in our code that I know of. We used to have a, Cindy, do we
just
post
has
it?
To be online, the, packet just by city code or state code has to.
But upon request, if they called staff and says I can't look online, can I get a printed copy? Do we forward that to them of that item that they're requesting? Or I mean, are there any, I guess, allowances we make for the public?
I'm sure we could accommodate them if it's, you know, here and there, but it's really state law just requires it to be on the web page. Yeah,
if it gets, yeah, we wouldn't probably advertise it because it gets to the cost unless they wanted to pay us the fee for a copy. But so
public record request.
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
All right, let's switch gears, Mr. Simonson.
Before we get going, Cindy, or anybody, do you know what time we started the training portion of this?
7:04, I think.
7:04. So we have about 15 minutes. And could somebody signal me when that's done? I don't want to keep you guys any longer than necessary.
Can we put you in charge of that, Cindy, your timekeeper?
Okay. And if you don't mind, I'm going to come up here. I've spent...
Approach the bench.
About 30 years of my life.
I'm ready.
Judges from the podium, and I'm just more comfortable doing that.
All right. I've got my gavel to keep you in line.
What's that?
I've got the mayor's gavel to keep you in line.
Yeah. Well, you do that. First, I'll say that after last meeting, I was convinced that we needed to take a deep dive into preliminary plat review and final plat review and go over the requirements for both of those. And I still think we need to do that, but I realized that this last legislature passed a bill that is going to require all the cities to make some changes in their subdivision ordinances. And the Utah League of Cities and Towns has circulated a suggested change, and so there will be some change, and it just didn't make sense to do all that and then just have these changes come down right after the training. So that's why I'm not there tonight. So why do we do variances in this meeting where variances don't come before you? You may remember about 3 months ago, we had Thomas and Rebecca Wyant, and they were up here on a conditional use permit, I think for their artificial grass that they wanted to put in. And then they also brought up that they also had a variance going on. And I saw some confused looks among the Planning Commission, and because you haven't dealt with those. So I thought it was a good idea to at least talk about those a little bit so you know what they are and if people bring them up. Variances are a way to escape the requirements of a zone. And so it sounds like a panacea almost, you know, that when you first hear about it. But then you find out what the requirements are in order to get a variance, and you find out it's difficult to get a variance. And in the time I've been with the city, which is now a little over 3 years, there's been about 7 variance applications, and none of those have been granted. I think the Wyants got the most sympathy, and I, you know, if I have time, then I'll tell you a little bit more about how that ultimately came down. But where the way they usually come up is somebody will make a phone call to the city and say, and call the development office and say, or code enforcement and say, does the city allow this new RV pad and thing going over it within, right, they've built it right on my property line. And And they'll say no, and so code enforcement will go out there and look at it, and it'll be discovered that they have built this without ever having come and applied for a permit with the city, and so therefore they never realized that they were in violation of the code, and they're saying, well, certainly the city isn't going to make me tear this down. I just spent $15,000 installing this. And sadly, for them, the city is going to make them tear it down. And so they talk about their options, and one of the things that comes up is a variance. And so they'll apply for variance. But the problem is that very few of them will qualify for a variance. And what I'll do is once I get it on my desk, their application, I will call them up and give them, or if they have an attorney, I'll call their attorney and I'll give them my honest opinion. And they get mad. But what I'm trying to do is save them like $800 that it costs to apply for the variance. And, you know, and I try and be real polite and tell them that they should talk to their own counsel, but in my honest opinion, they're not going to have a chance to win the variance. But by the time they're $15,000 into it, they're kind of desperate, you know. Now the Wyants didn't do that. They were smarter about it. They saw that building a fence was a code problem. And so they applied for it before they built the fence. And what I'm going to read you portions of, if we have time, is the decision that ultimately came down. The city hires a hearing officer to hear these variance applications. And all of them, since I've been here, have been by a land use specialist attorney named Craig Hall. He's very, very good. And he'll come in and hold a hearing. And like you discussed earlier, it's a public hearing. Anybody can come and attend. They can also testify if they want. Very few do, but it is open to the public. Craig Hall says on this one, the applicants have applied for a variance and exception from the prohibition of installing a fence of approximately 3 to 4 feet in height along the front of their property adjacent to Alyssa Meadow Drive. And you may remember what they were proposing was quite a nice fence. You know, it was, I think it was simulated wrought iron and it looked nice. But whether we think it's nice or not isn't what matters. It's what the zone and what everybody in the neighborhood has to comply to. This request is contrary to the provisions of chapter such and such and such and such of the ordinances of South Jordan City, and it's apparent that the front yard is not allowed. The purpose of installing a fence in the front yard is to reduce or eliminate the foot traffic onto the applicant's property from the students waiting for the Jordan School District bus to pick them up. And they were having, you may remember from the conditional use, they were having these problems, trash, bicycles left out. Even in one situation, they testified about vandalism to their home. It starts raining, all the kids come up on their porch to get under the overhang while they wait for the bus, you know, and these were so they wanted to build a nice looking fence out there, and that doesn't seem all that unreasonable, but it was in violation of the ordinance. So he describes that situation, and then he said, here are the requirements to grant a variance, and these are set forth in the state code, and South Jordan has mimicked that state code and has basically an identical ordinance. Okay, and there's actually five things that you've got to show, and you have to show each of them. You know, you can't show 4 out of 5 and get your variance. You've got to show 5 out of 5. 1, literal enforcement of the ordinance would cause an unreasonable hardship for the applicant that is not necessary to carry out the general purposes of the land use ordinance. So you've got to show a hardship. But the hard part of this is not necessarily stated there, because all the cases say the hardship can't be an economic hardship. You can't just say, this is really going to be expensive to tear this thing down, or my lot is shaped a little bit weird, and so it's going to be more expensive for me to do it than my neighbor. You've got to show that there's a real hardship. And that applies into number 3. I'll skip down to that. Granting of the variance is essential to the enjoyment of a substantial property right possessed by other property owners in the same zone. So here's the ideal fact situation for obtaining a variance. You move into your subdivision, you've bought your lot, and you go to build your house, and the contractor comes back to you the next day after he started to dig and says, we've got a problem. You've got a sinkhole in the middle of your lot, and we can't build on that. It's all mushy, and it just will not support your foundation. So that is a real hardship, and yes, it creates a financial hardship, but it's a hardship that denies you the opportunity to do something that all the other people in the zone do, and that is build a home. So that is a pretty compelling scenario for 1 and 3, that you have the opportunity to build a home. So maybe under those circumstances, you come in and apply for a home, but your home obtain, maybe you can get a variance so your home can be within the setback distances of the lot. And under those circumstances, I think that you would be able to get a variance because of the hardship and the substantial property right possessed by others in the same zone. Number 2 that I skipped over, there are special circumstances attached to the property that do not generally apply to other properties in the same zone. Okay, so in the Wyant's case, I had to be the bad guy that argued to the hearing officer that their hardship is not attached to the property. In fact, their hardship is entirely off the property because there's a bus stop there. And so Craig Hall, I know, felt bad for these people, and I felt bad for them. But at the same time, it came down to an issue of, is this something that is attached to the property that is allowed for variance under the code? And Craig was concerned enough about it that he had us go back and submit supplemental memorandums on it. You know, he says, I want you to just address this one thing. Is this something attached to the property? Because it's affecting their property. And sadly for the Wyants, who I think thought I was the devil incarnate, but I found a case that said it has to be on the property itself. And so ultimately, Mr. Hall said, counsel for the city and the applicants have submitted supplemental memorandums addressing the issue of special conditions attached to the property. These supplemental memorandums have been reviewed. I believe the language cited by the city from the Xanthos case is controlling, i.e. the decision states that, quote, what must be shown by the applicant is that the property owner itself, that the property itself contains some special circumstance. And so even though they had proven 4 out of 5 things to obtain their variance, they were denied. And so it's if you ever advise a neighbor to go consider applying for Xanthos, or excuse me, Xanthos is the case, applying for a variance, then think carefully about it. Just tell them that that's something they should talk to an attorney about so they can, before they've paid that big application fee and made that big effort, that they can go on for, you know, they can make an educated decision whether they want to proceed. Commissioner Darby. Interestingly enough, that came up during the hearing, and they said they had, and the school board was completely unsympathetic. Wow. Yeah, that was another thing that kind of made the hearing officer sympathetic to their situation.
That's surprising, because they need the bus stop in our neighborhood about every week, it seems like.
Yeah.
So is this a case, though, where we often try to educate citizens if they've got a concern, what can be done to address it? Can they call the South Jordan City Police and ask them to come enforce trespassing? I don't know how often, but...
Or was it in the public strip?
Well, I mean, they were talking about the public strip being damaged, but they said the rest of their yard and their porch was also being impinged on.
I can't remember what the testimony was on that. I think that they said that they had... tried that, and this had been going on for, they said, years. Like 10 years or something like that, and it just had never found a situation. And so I could tell Craig Hall was trying to get them a variance, but it just didn't happen. Now, fortunately, is that it?
That's good time.
Fortunately, that's it.
Well, no, finish your thought.
I got one. Yeah, I was going to say, I have one question.
It's up to you. If,
yeah, please. You know. 3 more minutes. You don't have to time it, but we'll wrap it up.
You know, some examples of some others. You know, I mentioned, there was one case where people bought a house planning to put an addition on the house, and the previous owners had actually poured the foundation for the addition. Unfortunately, when they came in to get a permit with the city, they found out that the foundation that had been poured was within the setback area on the side of their house. And so the city, and it was like 1 foot, okay? It was 1 foot within the setback area. And so while 1 foot may not sound like much, it's enough to stop you from getting a variance. The hardship cannot be self-created. The hardship has to be something associated with the property. And you know, they said, well, we didn't create it. The previous owners created it, but that didn't help them at all. And so they pretty quickly lost their application. There was another one where I think I mentioned it the first, where they had built an RV, like a carport kind of thing to put their RV in, but they build it right within the setback area again, and not just 1 foot, it was like right up against the edge of the property. And the arguments were made, well, this is a hardship because all the other people in the neighborhood have houses where they have, where they're parking their RVs. Well, it just so happened that their particular lots had room to build their carport or RV port not within the setback. So I could give you lots of examples, but that's just a basic overview of what.
So two questions. When do we see site plans, I feel like fairly often, like on accessory dwelling units that ask us to waive setbacks or window requirements or whatnot? Why are sometimes we given the opportunity to grant that versus not? What, I guess, defines a variance versus just an exception or a conditional use, I guess?
I can't think of an occasion where you have discretion to waive a zoning requirement. Now, if you're talking about a conditional use permit.
What about a height? We've been asked to, okay, is that not an
but
ordinance?
See, that, as I recall,
or has permits that allows us to.
I think the code in that case says the planning commission can if you see fit that it's going to fit with the neighborhood, you can allow that, you know, because it's not the maximum height of the accessory structure can't exceed 25 feet, but it's the one where you, or they, if their accessory
compared
structure
to
is
the
taller than the house, you have, you know, the planning commission can waive that requirement, but you can't. And that's in the code that gives you that.
Yeah, if there's discretion for you building the code, then you can certainly do it. But as far as the one thing that Utah, well, every state in the union has come down, because when I started this area of the law, I'm not going to tell you how many years ago that was, but I mean, people were making things up as they went along. You know, somebody came in before the planning commission and they didn't like your use. Oh, he's trying to expand his oil refining factory. We don't want that. And so everything was starting to become ex post facto and political. Who had favorites on the planning commission? Who had favorites on the city council? And everything's changed since then. It's like, and the city's got to live with it too. Oh, we should, before this application came in, we should have changed our ordinance to prohibit that, and we didn't. And they got their application in before we could do a moratorium or anything else. Now they're vested. Vesting has been a huge issue in land use for many years, and the laws are pretty strict now that it doesn't matter who you know on the planning commissioner or on the city council and how much they're your buds. It just doesn't matter. You got to follow
up. So just kind of follow up on that. I'm assuming that the variance officer, the hearing officer, is kind of the final step. I mean, I guess there's always, you can appeal to a higher court, but because it's in state law, but I guess the only recourse people would have would then be to get the city council to change the ordinance citywide to allow for whatever variance they're seeking. That would be the only remedy after a variance officer, correct? Hearing officer?
Yeah, you know, it's one of those situations where you think, okay, is your chance better is your time and money spent better trying to apply for a variance, or is your time and money spent better, not your money necessarily, we don't want to do bribery charges, you know, as we've heard in the news lately, but and I'm sure that would never happen, but is it spent better calling up your elected officials and talking to them about your situation and seeing if anything can be done.
And that's why when Michelle's comment about the bus stop and the length of time where they've had this impact makes me think it's not one group of kids, that it might be a more generic problem to the city where
people are not respecting the other properties. And I've got to believe there's pieces of code that, whether it's opening up, pulling up a food truck and placing it somewhere in the neighborhood or something, that can prevent against these non-permanent intrusions that can, because really what they were asking is like, just move it to something else. And this other entity that intersects with the city.
Yeah, and I think it could be very simple in their case. I mean, let's change the ordinance to say that you can build a 3-foot simulated wrought iron fence in front of your house.
Yeah, I mean, it could be, but in that case, it's like, but the district sets up bus stops every year, and so it may not have, it may not be, and so I, you know, it could be something else. Like it could be saying like maybe.
By the time you're getting a variance, you're focused on one person.
You're focused on one person, but what I'm saying is like you was connecting your comment about time and effort to make it. And what I'm saying is it sounds like given the length of time that they've in that hearing that they said they've had this problem, that it feels like there's a general benefit to all the bus stops in the city to have clear expectations and understanding about the impact that you might be having, you know, the district might be placing there, and maybe the city council can have some veto is not the right word, but if the city council has decides that that it's causing an impact to the city or the staff or whoever, that they could, probably the city council could force them to move a bus stop somewhere else. Close, but not the same.
What I've always liked about you, Commissioner Catmull, is that you're a big thinker, and you're looking at big solutions, and that's a great quality. So
that's something to think about. Is like you said, you inverted the problem. So you go from one person. Is it better to solve it generically?
Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to discuss? Other than that, I think I've used more than 3 minutes.
Yeah, just one quick question. So I know we talked about variances, and I appreciate that, and the hearing officer in the process with that. How is that different than, I guess, a board of adjustment, which is kind of maybe similar, you're adjusting lot lines or things like that. Is that different in the city of South Jordan? Do we have a board of adjustments, or is it just the planning commission, city council, hearing officer for a variance?
I don't think we have a board of adjustments at all.
No, we used to have a board of adjustment who handled variances. The board of adjustment was appointed people to do that, and then at some point the city council decided they wanted to be the board of adjustment, and that didn't last very long because city council realized they couldn't make everybody happy, because somebody who wanted to do something only wanted to make them happy, but their neighbor was complaining about what they were doing, so then they were making that, you know, so they decided to go a different direction, and they went to the hearing officer, who is trained with this in the state law, who knows the laws and to follow them. And we had a board of adjustment that the city actually sued the board of adjustment for their decision to grant a variance on the grounds that they did not, you know, they did not meet the requirement, those 5 requirements, yet they felt sorry for them and granted it. And so then we turned around and sued them in court, and city won.
Was this a community? Was it like this commission? Was that the old?
Yeah, it would be. They were 5.
They were appointed. I remember. Okay.
So it was. It was way back early years when I started working here that we sued them, and it was like.
So.
And they were sued as individuals as well as, you know, because, so they were. We won because we dropped the case once they said, well, we'll change our mind then.
The current system is much better for meeting the requirements of due process. And the constitutional concept of due process extends to this situation, because you're restricting the use of property. Anytime you're restricting the use of property, you're ultimately talking about due process of law as allowed by the 5th and 13th amendments to the United States Constitution, and also Article 1, Section 22 of the Utah Constitution is due process. The first time I ever represented a client on a variance, it was in Tokerville, Utah. And literally, they said, okay, you got to bring it before the Board of Adjustment. So I made an application to bring it before the Board of Adjustment. It turned out that they didn't have any Board of Adjustment. Nobody had made such an application for so long. So they hurried and rounded up a bunch of their friends and said, we need you to sit on the Board of Adjustment. And they said, okay, what do we do as a Board of Adjustment? So they got the city attorney, the opposing attorney, to come in and train them. And he came in there and trained him and said, okay, here's why you got to deny this variance. Okay, and so ultimately we won that because, as you said, there is a procedure for appealing. And I said, how is this due process? They get trained by the opposing attorney and told how they ought to rule before there's even a hearing. And we ultimately got our variance down there. But anyway, call me anytime or email me or whatever you want to do if you have questions or follow-up. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, staff. Thank you, commissioners. Any other business for tonight?
How's 2 weeks from now look?
Sort of busy. We got on that. We probably have, at least we have Kennecott or the Daybreak subdivision that I've been talking about for months now is probably almost ready to go forward. But I think there's another rezone on the docket, and I can't remember what else, but
anytime is favorite.
You want to push it to the 24th, don't you?
Yes, we could push everything to the 24th if you'd like.
Well, that'd be worse.
Find people handle
that'd
it.
Be worse. Worse on the 24th, because there is already another reason on the 24th. And that one's going to be much more controversial. I don't know if you've heard about the senior housing project on 102nd South, an apartment complex for seniors, 102nd South by 40th West. We're having a open house on that with the neighbors tomorrow night. It's already had some controversy stirred up enough, and it's going to be on the agenda on the October 24th for the Planning Commission. And then
it is a hot topic on social media. I'll be on a cruise.
So I have my first item I brought up tonight on standby of the police protection.
So Nate is going to
chair that evening.
Because
he's not going to a concert here. Nope. He said it's on the record.
I don't know. Maybe I'll go buy concert tickets real quick. Just a joke.
So the 24th is the one meeting you're going to be?
I probably will be here, but it is the week that the kids are out of school. So I just got to double check with my wife.
But the three of us will be, right?
I haven't heard anything yet.
So anyway, yeah, that the October 24th meeting I'm not looking forward to.
Or talk to the mayor to get a new appointee by the 24th.
Yeah, right. Yeah. All right. Well, cool. I will move that we adjourn our training. Well, I don't know. I think
we
should.
Public meeting
portion. Okay. I have a second. All in favor?
Aye.
All right. Any opposed?